Hello, welcome to the New Stack Makers, a podcast where we talk about at-scale application development, deployment, and management.
Storage provides secure, private, affordable cloud object storage for developers building applications or storing data in the cloud. The company's DCS, Decentralized Cloud Storage Service, uses encryption by default and user-assigned access controls to give developers better control of their data.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the New Stack Makers. Thanks, everyone out there who's listening. We have a show for you today. If you're really interested in something new and something that's really starting to take, I would say, developers, helping them think a little bit differently about their storage. The topic is decentralized storage. And we have two of the people who really study this all the time. Krista Spriggs, Engineering Manager for Infrastructure at Storage. Hi, Krista.
Hey.
And Ben Golub, Executive Chairman and CEO at Storage. And Ben and I have talked many a time, dating back to the matrix of hell, as I recall, the conversation we had about container technologies when he was a CEO at Docker. Hey, Ben.
Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Once COVID lifts, I want to treat you to another burger at the Doug Fir.
I'm there. Our topic today, what are some of the use cases with decentralized cloud storage? And what is the best option out there? What are some of the advantages and challenges it can pose to an organization? There's so much to talk about. And Heather, maybe you could just tell us about your thoughts on this, because you did think about this and you wrote these notes down a little bit. And then I'd like to just get into a little introduction with Chris and Ben, just saying a little bit about themselves.
I'm Heather Joslin, features editor at the New Stack, and I'll be joining Alex and Krista and Ben today. One thing that comes up, which I hope we'll get into a little bit, is the increase in data and what kind of vulnerabilities this brings to mind, and how we can think about the best ways to protect data and also make it available when needed. Looking forward to the conversation.
Great. Why don't we just do a quick intro? And Krista, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Krista. I use she, her pronouns. And as you alluded to, I'm a software infrastructure engineering manager at Storage, and I oversee the DevOps and infrastructure team.
Great. And Ben.
I'm Ben. I use he, him pronouns. I'm CEO of Storage. As you mentioned, I used to be the CEO of Docker, and before that, Lustre. And this is actually my eighth startup. And you know what I love about the startup ecosystem is we keep creating new things that developers love and address real problems in the world. And right now, data is doubling every year, and it's being created and distributed and consumed at the edge. And yet, the cloud is still largely centralized. And we think there's a more economical, environmentally sound, secure, performant way to do things. And that's what we're trying to do at Storage.
When I started in my career as an enterprise tech reporter, distributed storage was a very foreign concept. That was, I think, probably circa Gluster days. It might have been a little bit before or after, I can't recall. And how do you think then distributed storage became so popular? Why did it become so popular? And do you see any parallels to it with decentralized storage?
If you go back 30 years or whatever, right, I could use a different example as the internet, right? I mean, before then, telecommunications was all centralized. And people thought the best way to make sure that you were secure and reliable was to build big bunkers and big telecommunication towers and have everything controlled by a few telecom companies. And then suddenly people figured out that actually a much better way to communicate is by having lots of little boxes, having lots of routers and bridges all over the world, each run by different people. And as you and I are talking, this conversation is getting broken up into packets that are going all over the place. And we don't care who's running those servers, and we don't care who's running those routers and bridges, because it ends up being a lot more secure and reliable if you do it in a decentralized way. We saw the same thing with storage. Trying to build a box that will never fail is an exercise in futility. Trying to find people who will never make mistakes is an exercise in futility. But if you distribute things, you get the power of large numbers and you get the power of things to go the other way.
And just to kind of add on to that, I think that we're kind of in a bit of a transition period right now. And what we're trying to do is make that transition as easy as possible. So meeting developers at familiar interfaces and kind of working with what might be very new technology behind the scenes, but in ways that developers are already very used to dealing with data.
Some of those challenges that you see out there must relate to, again, when I think what Ben is talking about, that the centralized aspect of storage. And I think, first of all, of the work that we do in writing about scale at scale. And one of the reasons that we've seen more interest in microservices is because of the scale question, and you want to be able to have more flexibility in your applications. It's just a lot more competitive. What are some of the challenges that you're seeing companies facing these days? Ben, are there any particular ones you think about?
We think about scale challenges all the time, and we think about resiliency challenges all the time. The move to microservices enables people to achieve massive scale and enables them to change rapidly and deal with things as atomic elements rather than having everything all sort of tied together. Really, this is the same kind of problems with storage. Data is doubling every year. I think we're going to create enough data this year as a world to fill a stack of CD-ROMs to the orbit of Mars and back. And if the price of storage has not come down, anytime you're storing data in clear text in a centralized location, it's one mistake or one bad hacker away from being compromised. And ultimately, I think we probably don't want a world where 80% of the cloud is controlled by three of the largest companies on the planet who happen to all be in the business of selling data. That's a lot of what we're trying to address at storage.
What are some of the best use cases for decentralizing an organization's data?
Some of the use cases that we're using today, we like to use this expression, drink our own champagne. So we actually use our own platform for lots of our own different things. We do database snapshotting at intervals that wouldn't necessarily be very cost effective with traditional cloud storage. So we're backing up things all the time to our own network. We're also using it for our archiving of our aggregated logging systems. We do these hackathons every now and then. My team, we used an open source aggregated logging system, and we actually built in storage DCS compatibility in there. So we only keep about 12 hours of kind of hot files, so to speak, or hot logs. And then everything else, we just archive into storage DCS. It's really cool to be able to think about the data that we want to store and not have that cost or any of those kind of economical factors play a part in us having to be picky or choosy with how much data we store. So we've done integrations there. There's a lot of integrations coming up around backing up Kubernetes state as well, because everybody's running Kubernetes these days. There's been some tooling developed in the open source community to back that up to storage DCS as well. So we're seeing lots and lots of different ways. As a DevOps engineer, it's like my default now. Anytime I need to put any data somewhere in any type of persistent way, it's so easy for me to just write the tool myself using our own libraries. And that's actually been really, really cool.
That's so interesting. We were having a conversation the other day with someone who talked about the problems, for instance, with Helm.
Yep. Oh, and familiar with those.
And the question came about, how do you do backup for Helm? Because if you're building these complex charts and you lose them, you're in a, you know, you're facing a problem, let's just say.
Yeah, I think you see, you know, sort of across the board, people are creating lots and lots of data, obviously. And most of the data that they're creating is not structured data anymore. It's files, it's folders, it's videos, it's pictures, it's geo data sets. And there's gold in that data. And people want to be able to store it. They want to be able to store it in a way that can't be compromised. They want to store it in a way that it's close to whoever's going to be consuming it. And the decentralized approach where data is encrypted, split into pieces, distributed in a redundant way across the globe ends up just being a better, more economical and safer way to do things. And so we're seeing, in addition to Krista, who's making sure that she's always our toughest customer, we've got people who are creating videos, we've got people who are doing large scientific data sets. Across the board, anything that you could do with Amazon S3 for object storage, you can now do in a decentralized way with storage, and it's compatible. So you don't even have to rewrite your application.
Yeah, we've been finding more and more tools that are just drop-in compatible as well, which is really, really cool. For example, so I have a Tesla, and some of the features of the Tesla is, you know, you've got your Sentry mode and your dash cam. And typically those would just be stored on a USB drive. And then I would unplug it, plug it into my computer, back up those data files maybe, or just delete them because I don't know if they're valuable or not. And I actually integrated some open source projects to push that data directly to the cloud every time I get home and my car goes on the Wi-Fi. So it's just a little Raspberry Pi that just sits in my glove box. And it was like too easy almost is how it felt. You know, I kind of wired everything together and then went for a drive and then checked my bucket using the object browser and I had files there and it was really cool. So it was just like kind of surprisingly easy, I guess, which is always kind of a great feeling, especially when you're kind of working with all sorts of different tool sets all the time and some of them have more friction than others. Let's put it that way.
Do you have a lot of friends who have Raspberry Pis in their glove compartments?
I have a lot of friends that are asking if I can set them up with Raspberry Pis in their glove compartments.
I could ask all kinds of questions about Raspberry Pi in your glove compartment and how that relates to decentralized storage. Maybe help me connect the dots there a little bit more.
I think the biggest one for me was just that it's a good amount of data that's created every time I go for a drive. And I might not understand the value of that data in time before it's overwritten, right? If I'm just using a USB stick or something, the fact that it's just automatically all pushed up means that if I notice like a massive scratch on my car or something a week later, then I can actually go back and try and find out if something did happen or what. It's just kind of nice to, again, not have to think about any of the cost prohibitions, I guess, or blockers around just storing all of my data. And especially, you know, when you get into unstructured data and things like that, you know, we think about data lakes and everything. A lot of that data, you don't know how valuable it is until you have a question to ask. And if you don't store all of the data that you have available to store, you might be painting yourself into a corner where you can't ask the type of question that you want to ask, and you'll never get that data back. So the ability to store this great abundance of data just has so many advantages. And I feel like it really unlocks different types of problems that you can solve because you suddenly don't have this big blocker to face.
As Krista was saying, right, you're certainly generating a lot of data every time you're driving a Tesla or wearing a Fitbit, or your meter is recording what's happening in your house, and you multiply that by all of the people in the world who are, or devices in the world that are generating data, there's really valuable information in there, right? It's being created at the edge. We don't know what it's going to be useful for. What we do know is that a lot of it's highly sensitive, and we don't want to have it be shared indiscriminately. On the other hand, we want to make sure that when analysis wants to happen, the data is there, and it's there in an easy to access, accessible way, and a non-cost prohibitive way. And again, all of that sort of points to data being created, consumed, distributed at the edge. We sort of want to have the storage be the same way.
I just kind of want to poke in there a little bit on the performance. So with this aggregated logging use case, we've actually found that requesting data from our hot storage, which would be on the servers that we're running the aggregated software on, is just about as quick as actually retrieving it from storage DCS. So you kind of blur the lines, which is really cool. Suddenly I've got this kind of mixed file system in a sense, and there's no real end user performance difference. I've been like really surprised. And sometimes I'll write a query where I know that the data is going to be coming from storage DCS and it's just there.
So let me just ask a quick question before Heather jumps in. Is that the point of decentralized storage though? Is it to make the peer-to-peer network so resilient and so performant that it is almost a natural replacement for centralized storage, or is there a balance with centralized storage and distributed storage?
Decentralization does huge things for performance because you get the benefits of parallelism. It also does huge things for durability. 50 drives would have to fail simultaneously in locations all around the world for you to lose your file, and so we've never lost a file. It does amazing things for economics because we're not building new data centers and firing up new power plants in order to make this work. And it does amazing things for security because there's no sort of single person making a mistake or device failing that somehow compromises your data. And all of that is sort of inherent to the fact that it's decentralized and run on lots of different devices, run by lots of different people in lots of different places where you're not dependent on any person, network, power station, geography being there in order for things to work.
What is the relevance though with distributed storage that we know of, more centralized version of it, to decentralized storage? And what's the relationship between those two types of storage capabilities?
So when we initially built the prototype for archiving these logs to storage DCS, we were expecting maybe some performance issues. And that's why we would potentially want that hot storage. Just through this conversation, I'm kind of thinking, maybe I'll just turn that down to like 5 minutes and see what happens. Because in all honesty, from our experience of using this tool over the last couple of weeks, the line is becoming so blurred that I'm starting to think that it doesn't actually matter if it's a centralized versus decentralized, at least at the read and write rates that we're talking about for this use case.
And Alex, I mean, I think if you want to sort of like draw a path, back 15 years ago, people thought if you wanted performance, secure, reliable storage, you had to buy one really big, expensive box. Then distributed storage sort of taught us, hey, you can actually get all those things by distributing your data across large numbers of drives that you run And with decentralization, we're sort of taking that one step further and say, instead of any one individual owning and running those drives, we have the world running those drives. And that's kind of the power of decentralization. It's the logical extension of what we've been doing for the past, 30 years in computing.
Who are the developers that are using decentralized data storage and how are they using it?
It's a pretty heterogeneous bunch of people who are using storage, which is nice. We've got people using us from something like, I think, 180 countries and territories right now for a pretty broad range of applications. What we generally see that they all have in common, though, as Krista was saying, they have data and that data is important. But storing data in centralized clouds is expensive and often it involves big security challenges. And especially we're seeing a lot of people in sort of more privacy-centric environments coming to us saying, we like the fact that nobody can mine this data. Storage can't mine the data. We technically cannot do it, right? We don't see the data. Even the metadata is encrypted. And I think people are getting really attracted to that and finding, as Krista said, that it's actually incredibly easy. You don't have to change a lot in order to take advantage of all of the sort of cost and security and performance advantages of decentralization.
I'd like to jump ahead a little bit and ask about the approach storage takes with its new storage DCS. What's the architecture that you've developed? How is it useful for developers?
With storage DCS, we appeal and we meet developers at the API and the interface that they're familiar with. The ease of onboarding, the ease of creating a POC, all of these things are really ways that we can speed up that process and speed up those development cycles. So, that's a huge one. With storage DCS as well, we're inherently multi-region for all of the metadata. And usually that's something that is kind of another feature level up or something in other offerings. We are extremely durable, both at the file level and at the metadata level.
File data and the metadata level. Can you talk a little bit about that distinction?
So there's obviously the files that people actually upload into our decentralized storage system. But then there's also where those files are. So with a huge number of nodes spread all across the world, we have to know where those pieces live. And that's the metadata that I'm kind of referring to. And so we have a lot of fault tolerance and high availability built into that system to ensure that you can always access your data and find out where to go and retrieve it from.
What are the trade-offs that you have found with this approach? Everything has a trade-off. Centralized storage definitely has trade-offs. Decentralized storage must have trade-offs too. What are some of the trade-offs that you're finding?
I think that there's certain use cases where encrypting the data, splitting it up into pieces and sort of spreading around the world don't make sense. So if you're running a live database, you probably want to do that with block storage in one place. You're doing lots and lots of writes all the time. For some people or some applications, it's important for the compute to be located right next to where the data is. That's not a great use case for what we're doing. But what we're finding is for something like 80% of the data that's being created and where most of the growth is, this decentralized approach just makes sense. And so for people who care about security, who care about economics, and who care about ease of use and getting the data closer to where it's being created and consumed, this is the right approach. And of course, for some people, this is new. So as with all new things, there are early adopters. There are more conservative people who take a while to warm up to it. But we've been very pleasantly surprised by how fast people have sort of latched on to this as an exciting new way to do things.
In a similar way that a lot of companies, and I've had lots of experience with this, moving from a more siloed over-the-fence model for deployments into continuous integration, continuous deployment, a lot of that is more of a culture shift than it is a tooling problem. And I find that that's potentially a challenge here as well, right? Is that it's new, people are slightly unfamiliar with it, but when they start to try it out and when they really see the value, it starts to click.
What are some of the cultural changes that need to happen in those situations?
It's a bit of an education thing. So in the sense of decentralized storage, oh my goodness, my files are on other people's computers and things like that. That can be a bit shocking at first until we're able to really dive into how it is so secure and how it's actually more secure than centralized storage. It's some of those fears, those initial reactions, I think, are probably the things that are coming up the most for that culture shift.
Yeah, I think Krista put it really well. In many ways, this is the same sort of cultural barriers that people had to come over when they first started thinking about cloud. How could I imagine that somebody could do a better job of running servers or providing security than I can? And yet, what you end up realizing is that a large community of people, a large and diverse set of devices split all over the way just inherently ends up being more secure and more durable because there's no single point of vulnerability. It takes people a while to get to that, but when they realize that they're fallible and any device that they own is fallible, the best way to be really, really resilient is to not rely on any one person, including yourself, or any one environment, including your own environment.
Looking ahead, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges or problems to solve in the area of cloud data storage and decentralized cloud data storage?
I think you mentioned one of them, which is the cultural barriers, but there's, of course, a long list of features and enhancements that we're trying to do. Honestly, I think that if we look back in 10 years, we'll see that decentralized cloud in general, not just decentralized storage, makes the same kind of sense that we realized centralized telecommunications did 20 years ago when the internet came about, right? That's where we think the industry is going. And that's, you know, I think, why people like Krista and myself sort of glommed onto this, even though it's still early days.
I would just like to conclude by asking for each of you about what are some of the most pressing problems you're seeing developers face these days for your friends who are working in the space. And I love the idea about experimentation and like, what's that experimentation that you're seeing? Like, Chris, you're talking about your Raspberry Pi. I love that because it gets to the kind of heart of what developers really like to do. They like to try to find new ways to hack something together, to like create something that puts their mind into a new dimension. And I think that's just such an important part of what is new, you know, in this world, like all the different spaces it opens up. Krista, does that resonate with you at all?
Just like any other problem solving, you have something you're trying to accomplish and you have potentially a bunch of primitives that you can use to build that solution. And using decentralized storage as one of those primitives, number one, there's, in my opinion, there's a really cool factor and just an interest in experimenting with new technologies. But also, when you kind of dip your toe in and you start to actually see all the benefits, it really snowballs from there. One of the first projects that I would say the Tesla one is probably the first side project that I had worked on that involved storage DCS. But my goodness, everything that I'm thinking about now is like, how can I use storage DCS to store that persistent data? So it's just really cool. It's a new way of thinking. And I feel like when you use a new tool or a new technology, it can kind of spark a different type of or reignite creativity. If you can get people interested in trying something new, like I'll try a new database sometimes and things like that, you start to understand what it's really good for. And then that can kind of shift and open you up to new ways of solving problems in the future as well. It's a really cool process. I really like it. I love this stuff.
I have one more question for you. When you're talking to friends of yours or colleagues or whoever it might be, and they ask you, what is decentralized storage? What does it really mean? How do you explain to them to really make it captivating?
I usually give a bit of a rough definition of what centralized storage is. And then I basically say, well, what if you divided that into a million pieces and shipped it all around the world? And, you know, I kind of talk about that. And then, of course, the next thing to deal with is really, is it secure? And, you know, we talk about how everything is split and encrypted client side. And people think it's really cool. And we have a link sharing service that displays an estimated map of where all the pieces of your file are. And usually showing them that too, you get that wow factor when people realize that a video that they're watching or a file that they're about to download is coming from all over the world, just like naturally though, and by default, which is, I just think, super cool.
May I just relate a conversation I had with one of the customers that we're working with that kind of, I think, sort of encapsulates, you know, a lot of this. This is a developer working for an organization that is trying to sort of get into the future of data-driven health. They're trying to build a system where you can do queries and where you can take information on people's prescriptions and their latest lab results and whatever they're getting from their personal devices and their vaccination histories and use that to try and solve and figure out what's going on with people. And as you can imagine, there are a few challenges that they're trying to deal with. They're trying to deal with the fact that this information is incredibly private and personal, so you don't want to have it be compromised. By the same token, you don't know what's going to be important until you actually do this kind of analysis. And different people will have different ideas about what is the right combination of data to look at in order to try and figure out what's going on with somebody. What they're finding is that we give them both the flexibility and the security and the cost that enables them to do this kind of work. When they ask, how does this work? It's distributed, right? It's decentralized. We can talk about this being like the Airbnb of disk drives in terms of the model, where we're using fair capacity that people have and they can rent it out. But really what it's about is just harnessing the power of people's creativity and spare capacity all over the world in the same way the internet did 30 years ago.
Well, on that note, with Airbnbs and distributed storage, I'm going to start thinking more about that next cabin I rent.
Well, you know, if that cabin that you're renting also happens to have a computer with a disk drive in it that's always on, you can be part of the network.
Well, I hope in this case I get away from that. But you know, maybe the general store close by.
General store, that works. That works well too.
All right, store, no pun intended. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Heather. Thank you so much for being co-host, Heather Joslin, senior editor.
Thanks for having me.
Krista Spriggs, engineering manager at Storage, and Ben Golub, CEO at Storage. Thank you all for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Storage provides secure, private, affordable cloud object storage for developers building applications or storing data in the cloud. The company's DCS, decentralized cloud storage service, uses encryption by default and user-assigned access controls to give developers better control of their data.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe on Simplecast to listen to more episodes of The New Stack Makers. Then create and share your favorite audiogram using our Simplecast player. For more great stories, go to thenewstack.io.